Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly Radio Show. Thank you for being with us today, taking time out of your day to allow us to be part of it. Time for garden questions and answers. If you've got a question, send it on over to gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Keep that in your memory. You can send a question anytime, gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call 24-7, 365. If we can't get you on the air, leave a message. We'll call you back. That number is 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-7469. And by the way, as sponsors or the commercials you hear during the program, they are the companies that are paying for the airtime so you can hear us. And those who are offering coupon codes, if you have missed it or are not able to capture that information during the program, you can go to our parent website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and click on the money tab at the top of the page, and they're all listed for you. Just click on the image. Takes you to their website. Just remember the coupon code and insert it at the time of purchase. All right, we got a couple of questions will come in this week. We'll see how many we get through to the top of the hour.
All right. Hi, my ginger from October that I planted is green. Is it safe to eat? I know we can't eat green potatoes because of solanine. What should I do?
Well, when ginger is stored for long periods of time in cold environments, it can become less acidic, and there it can cause it to change the pigmentation inside of it to a bluish gray color and even a green color, but it is safe to eat. So you can utilize that, and or if it's like potatoes and they've sprouted, you can regrow it again if you are doing it in a situation in which that the ginger is not going to freeze or get frost on, because ginger is a tropical plant and can be quite costly. So, if you are not familiar with ginger, it can have quite a little bite if you get a good chunk of it when you eat it.
Yeah, it's quite potent. So here's another question. Yeah. I want to start some seeds indoors. My question is, so I was wondering when to start my seeds. I was thinking a little closer to spring, my first year growing plants, and, you know, seeds have gotten so expensive.
Okay. This is a very, I'm going to give you a very generic answer because it depends on, I don't have the location of this individual, but for all of you are listening, whether you're listening in Boston, Denver, Kansas City, Southern Illinois, Chicago, or anywhere in between, it's based on your last average frost date. You can find that at your local extension office, or just go to your favorite search engine and type in my last average frost date and insert your zip code, and it will tell you. The USDA has changed some of the hardiness zones, which will adjust some of that. Does it adjust some of the frost dates? Somewhat.
Yeah, that's where the hardiness.
And a frost date is simply a guideline. It doesn't mean if today's your last frost date, tomorrow you can put it in the ground. That's not what that means. It's a guideline. So for, you know, I'm just going to ramble off some things here. Leeks, onions, celery, 10 to 12 weeks before your last average frost date. Brassicas, 4 to 6 weeks. Tomatoes, 6 to 8 weeks. Eggplant, ground cherry, 6 to 8 weeks. Kind of give you a guideline. There's a lot of different charts based on where you're at and when to start them. But she said that plants, they have gotten very expensive. That is true. We rely on the garden center as a backup if we are not able to start plants indoors. Again, a plant can be $3, $5, $6, $8, $10 based on what you're looking at. Tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, you're looking at $6+ a plant. Romaine lettuce, $5+ for, you know, it's almost like it's cheaper to go buy the actual produce than it is to buy the plant to make the produce. But
yeah, I think you kind of just have to decide what you're going to eat, what you know, how much you want, and how particular you want to be about things. I think that makes all the difference. All right, so another question is,
what can I grow on my small back porch?
Well, this is dependent on what way your porch faces. If it's facing the north, you might not be able to grow as much things that require a lot of sun versus if it's facing the south or west because of the access to sunlight. So I would take that into consideration. But you can always grow things like leaves, not leaves, like lettuce.
Leafy greens.
Leafy greens, thank you. Anything that has, so there's like a little saying, if it's for the fruit or the root, you need full sun. If it's for the leaves, then you can just grow it in partial shade. So leafy greens are always good, a good porch option. If you do have a lot of sunlight, you can definitely grow a lot of things.
Our back porch faces west. Faces east.
Southeast.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a small porch, and we have grown cherry tomatoes. We've made it trellis with a container. We've grown pole beans. We've grown cucumbers. We've grown green beans in a railing. We've grown Swiss chard in a railing container. So there is we've grown peppers in Rootmaker grow bags. We've grown beets in Rootmaker grow bags. We've grown leaf lettuce in Rootmaker grow bags. You can use coupon code ROOT, R-O-O-T 24 to save 15% off your order at rootmaker.com. As long as you have an imagination, a lot of things can be grown on a porch or a patio or a deck, minus, let's say, pumpkins or corn or something very large footprint required, yeah. Or like corn takes a tremendous amount.
Like very viney.
Yeah, very viney. Now, corn, there's a container variety of corn, but that's a whole other story for another show. But there, you can do a lot in a very small area, as you can in the ground as well.
Absolutely. You can get creative and just do a little bit of research for what works for what direction your porch faces.
What, if anything, do I need to put in the bottom of my raised bed before I fill it?
Well, if it was up to me.
Okay. What is up to you? You're answering the question.
When we started our raised beds, I would have put some sort of weed barrier down. Personally,
we didn't know
cardboard.
I know people are like, cardboard is toxic and all this stuff that we've sucked in. You know, yeah, I know, don't think
I would have put cardboard down because now we have a whole weed situation. Not saying that weeds couldn't grow through the cardboard, but I feel like it really helps smother them before you put down soil in a raised bed. But that's what a lot of people do, is they put down cardboard.
If you have gophers in the area or moles. Or voles, you want to put hardware cloth, which is a metal mesh webbing underneath the raised bed, and then 6 inches on either side and beneath the soil grade so they can't burrow up and destroy your produce, your plants in your raised bed. Cardboard, yes, especially if you're in a very weedy situation. If you've got a really, really tall raised bed, let's say 24, 36 inches, you can put logs, decaying logs, in the base of that bed to absorb some of the ambient space so you're not utilizing all of that for expensive compost. Don't put trash, don't put cans, don't put styrofoam, don't put any of that stuff in the bottom of the raised bed. Natural material. Leaves, it's going to take a lot. They're going to decay really quick. Pine straw, same thing. Logs would be the thing if you're going to fill a tall raised bed. But a raised bed doesn't need to be any more than 10 inches at minimum. Ours is 12. I think ours is 12.
And I thought ours was 10.
Maybe they're 10. I haven't measured lately. maybe they shrunk.
Yeah.
But that's some advice there in which to help you get your garden off better. And we went with raised beds simply because of the weed problem. Now, like Holly said, we do have weeds in our raised bed. You're going to have that because we don't keep up with it as much as we should. But it is 1,000 times less weeds than we ever would have had if we continued to do ground gardening. We had a tremendous amount of weeds, and we would work the ground very diligently and remove the roots. And within 8 weeks, you couldn't tell that I had spent 40 or 60 hours in the garden doing this. So we invested in the materials to do raised beds, and it has greatly reduced the amount of weeds, though we still have weeds, but it also has increased the produce in which we've gotten out. We went from 1,800 square feet to about 650 square feet and have not the quantity of produce has not diminished. It has actually increased because of that soil we've brought in and being able to manage what we have much more effectively and efficiently.
Do you think it's increased? I feel like it's about the same, but maybe it has increased.
It hasn't decreased at all.
No, it has not decreased.
Going from 1,800 square feet to 650 is not decreased at all.
So what did we learn today?
With that being said, what did we learn today? Well, I learned that the top layer or topsoil is called a horizon. I thought it was just topsoil. That's what I thought it was always called, but it's a horizon. That's like, what
that's
is like that?
The that's scientific term.
Okay, yeah. The science name.
Science name. I learned, and I guess it's more of an inspirational, I was more inspired by our guest to finally can meat. And Joey and I are going to do that with deer.
Venison.
And I think that just her talking about just finally pushed me over the
And I reached out edge. To a couple people in the outdoor world that I know can, and they're like, oh, yeah, it tastes like roast beef. Yeah, it's great. So
we'll
pressure can now, not water bath, pressure can.
Right.
So what we learned today is brought to you by Honey Bee Healthy.
Whether you're a gardener, a bee hobbyist, or a professional beekeeper, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has the products to help you maintain a healthy hive and thriving garden. For more information on how to use Honey Bee Healthy in your garden, visit honeybeehealthy.com.